We're gonna try this and see what transpires. A bunch of different styles to fill our desires. It's gonna be super fun and full of wit. Robert Bacon is the host and he's full of it. We're gonna try it. After we like it, maybe we'll try it again. Maybe not though, podcast.
Welcome to Try This Podcast, a podcast where every week we have on a comedian and we do the podcast that they have always wanted to do. I'm Robert Bacon. A while ago, we did a podcast titled Jews to Gentiles, and as the episode title implies, it was a podcast about a Jewish person explaining Jewish history and religion to a non-Jewish person. Well, we had no idea how it would go or if anybody would like it. Well, it turns out it was one of our more popular episodes, and people seemed to really enjoy it. So this week, we decided to revisit the idea, but with a slight twist. Two Jews and one Gentile. This week, we have on, of course, myself, and then David Schwartzbaum, and his father, Stephen Schwartzbaum. Stephen is a Jewish-Cuban immigrant who has a very interesting life story that we get into. I was very grateful to be able to speak with him, and I think the discussion that the three of us have is very interesting, fun, and I hope that you guys agree. I don't know what just came out of my mouth. Just a heads up, we had to record this podcast out of the studio, so I used a portable stereo microphone, and I'm sure you're going to be able to tell. David's on the left, I'm in the middle, and David's father, Stephen, is on the right. All right, that is enough talk. Let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jews to Gentiles.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Jews to Gentiles. My name is David Schwartzbaum, or Benjamin David Schwartzbaum.
Oh, God.
We have a very special show with you tonight. We have, of course, the Gentile Robert Bacon.
That's me, as always, here to poke fun at your religion.
There you go. And we have a very, very special guest all the way from the holy land of Miami, Florida, my father, Stephen Schwartzbaum. Zalman, what's your middle name? Do you have a middle?
None.
Zalman Schwartzbaum as well.
Yeah.
How you doing, Dad?
I'm doing great. I've never done one of these before, so let's see how it works itself out. Do I get completely edited out or...
No.
You're the special guest.
Oh, there we go.
You're the star.
You are, because David says that you know way more than he does, and you take it more seriously.
More seriously.
No, maybe David knows more than I do because he went to a Jewish day school his whole life.
That's what I'm saying. I think I know more than him, but he takes it more seriously. That's for sure.
Well, so how did you become Jewish? Let me guess.
Popping out of my mother.
There you go. But when did you, I want to ask, like, when did you realize, like, that you were Jewish or that, like, when did you finally oh, this is a religion thing? Like, did you have a moment like that?
Yes.
Yeah, when was that?
Probably when I was about 8 and we started, you know, I understood the holidays. So we moved from Cuba to New York and probably remember the first Passover because that was like a real Jewish event. And it's a holiday that I still like, and probably that's how I remember where I went to. I was a Jew. Also, when we moved from Cuba to New York, the Jewish community had a lady that didn't have a job, and they made a little school for us, and they taught us Yiddish and history of Jews.
Pass that over. You were born in Cuba.
Yes.
Which is amazing. What year was this? Like, you don't have to say the exact year, but like, what time from Cuba to New York, and was that kind of a big deal?
Yeah, it was a big deal. Yeah, I was born in 1954 in Havana, Cuba, and moved to Brooklyn, Bronx, New York in 1961, June.
Yeah, right during that time.
Right during the good time to be in Cuba. Well, do you remember any part, like, do you have, like, memories of when you were a child, like, being in Cuba?
Oh, yeah, of course,
like,
yeah.
Good or bad?
No, good.
All good?
All good. Mostly good, yeah. We had a good life there. We
Why'd
lived in a beautiful
leave?
Apartment.
One man. Why'd you become
Fidel
an immigrant?
Castro.
Yeah.
Is that really the reason?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. He took everything my father had, and he said he wasn't.
That was it.
Happened one more. Happened before with with us and being Jewish and in Poland. So my grandfather said it's time to go and packed up and left.
They
took
to
over
New York?
And went to New York.
Yep. Do you remember the first time getting? I assume it was a boat or was it a plane?
It was not a raft. It was not a boat.
It was a ship?
It was a Pan Am flight.
Okay, you flew?
We flew into Kennedy.
Okay, do you remember showing up to New York? Do you remember seeing the buildings? Oh, do you remember that feeling that you had?
Yeah, it was different, yes. I remember it was me, my mother, and my sister, and my father, for whatever reason, his words of wisdom sent us to Brooklyn with 20 cases of Cohiba cigars. Like we were gonna, you know, maybe he wanted me to start smoking at 7. But
so really, just to make a bunch of money
on
that?
Just to have something, because you could only take X amount of money with you, which I think was $2,000, I believe. Yeah.
And you're only supposed to allowed to bring in so many dollars worth of goods as well.
Right.
But I don't think you're allowed to bring cigars.
But that was after.
Oh,
really?
There's a picture of my mother and me carrying these cigars through, you know.
Oh, my God,
airport.
I would like to see that. If you guys could find that, I'll post it on the podcast website. That's awesome. So,
Astrid, a couple days ago, we went to go see a Jewish blues player.
Yeah.
Or he played the Jews. And I said, hey, think of like, what's your favorite like biblical Jewish story or something right? And you're like, oh, I have one.
I do have
one. So,
I still remember after all those drinks. I still remember.
Tell us the story and we'll comment about it and talk about it as we go.
You already know. My favorite story I had told Bacon was... Exodus and the splitting of the Red Sea.
Classic.
Okay, classic. I know that from the movies.
So, and the movie did a good job at it.
Yeah?
It still kind of holds up for like...
The special effects are great. So if I could picture my time in time to go anywhere, there was a time capsule, I would like to be there at the splitting of the Red Sea. Yeah.
Not the past? Not the future?
No, I don't know. You asked me. I guess I'm thinking of the past right now.
Wow.
I think it's great. I just think it's
amazing. What if you showed up and it wasn't as cool as that? Like, the walls didn't do that thing like the movie? It just kind of like slowly receded.
As long as it receded, it receded.
What happens if you got there and it didn't happen? Like, you showed up and there was nobody
there. I only had one shot at it.
And they're like, are you sure you want to go back this time? And you're like, yes. And you show up and it's nothing.
Or it happened like... Because, you know, the time frame is a little
messed up.
It happened like a year ago. You know, no, it happened at this date. And you show up and it's like, oh, they did that 20 years ago. You know, like, shoot.
David just did a wristwatch thing. Yeah. I don't know. Oh, hold on. Let me check my cell phone.
Yeah.
What? What's going
on? That would be a pretty epic thing to go back and see, though.
If it happened, that would be amazing.
So here's the thing. So... Let's say it did happen. So in Judaism, there's, of course, the five books of Moses. And then there's Midrash. And Midrash means it's stories that could have happened, might have happened. So one of the Midrashes I heard about this splitting of the Red Sea is, I was always curious, what happened to the fish? I was worried
about
the
fish.
That's
a valid question,
right?
The fish are there. They get swooped up. And the Midrash talked about the fish. The fish were living on the side of the waters. They were just there. So
just chilling.
I'm going to be honest with you about that, because we have fish tanks, right?
Right.
Where we take ultra care of these fish, and they're so gentle, these creatures, and they die constantly in these fish tanks. I doubt that these fish were just like chilling on the side.
You got to remember it, because if we're talking miracles, right, then I'm just saying, if we have a sea splitting, then the last thing you need to worry about is... Is he going to keep the fish alive? Yeah, he's going to keep the fish alive. He's moving a sea.
Does it really matter, though? Because so many of the...
Wait, so what does the Midrash say?
How many locusts died during the
locusts? A lot. I mean, millions.
So why not millions of fish?
I think the fish were
so what happened? What did the Midrash say about the fish?
The fish were fine.
Oh, that's it?
Just didn't say how they did. No fish was there to tell us how
animals...
the fish did well.
No animals were harmed in the making of this miracle.
Here's the thing. I don't think God cares about fish. If he does, he's doing a bad job.
So I doubt that he cared about him in that moment.
I think I'm with my dad. I think they survived.
Really? What about all the frogs? Wasn't there frogs
no,
all
no,
right
no,
from the
they
sky?
They don't live in the sea. They're freshwater.
I know.
But that was before.
They were from the Nile.
I know, but the frogs fell from the sky, right? In a biblical thing?
No, that's just the song.
Oh, I messed up. Anyway, so tell us the whole story. How does the crossing of the Red Sea go?
So the crossing goes like this. So as you know, the Jews are coming out of Egypt. Pharaoh decides
they're getting kicked out of Egypt, right?
No,
or they're leaving.
No, Pharaoh told them go after the the 10th plague. All, his son died because he was the firstborn. All the first
yeah.
male boys die. Mm-hmm. He's had enough. 10 plagues.
We're
Egypt
out.
Was, right. Pretty, you don't pretty, need to ask me to leave. That's right. He says, "Get the heck out!
Get the hell out!"
Yeah.
And
ask me once, I'll stay. Give me one plague, I'll stay.
He did 9 plagues, you know.
Yeah,
he was a hard guy, man.
10? That's enough. 10. Too many. I'm out.
Yeah.
Of here.
I mean, after it got rough.
He got rough. So after he lost his son, he said, "I had it. Get the hell out of my land."
Cool. So
and they packed up and left.
Cool. Yeah. So
they left with the riches of Egypt. But anyway, they're on their track going to Israel.
Cool.
Promised land. And Pharaoh, it's a couple of days, I think 3, maybe 4.
I'm not sure exactly, but I think around there.
Yeah. And his heart gets hardened again because he looks out and ain't no Jews building anything.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they were building the cities and he sees they're all gone and it bothered him. So he felt revenge, and they were the strongest army in the world at the time. So he mounted his best chariots, the best armament in the world, and said, I'm bringing them back. And he chased after them.
Oh, my God. What a change your mind on something like that. I mean, the 10 plagues and all that stuff, and you're like, get them out. And then just a couple days later, you're like, ugh.
I might have made a mistake.
It's like breaking up with a girl. And then next week being like, oh, my God, like... No one will ever love me.
Well, you get dressed in your best armor and you go after
that's
her.
That's right. That's exactly right. You run after her.
Okay, so go on. So he's chasing after this girl that he just broke up with. What happens?
So he chases after them, and they're at a freaking crossroads. They
get to the sea.
They get to the sea, and...
What was their plan before the potting
probably,
of it?
Oh, no, oh, so shit. It's interesting. Well, so they get to the sea, and immediately a bunch of the Hebrews start whining.
Right,
Moses, you took us out here to die. I think is the exact line. We want to go back. This is the worst.
This sounds like the Jews I know.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying, a bunch of whiners.
But
so,
no, but hold on. Question about this. Yeah. So they all. Where did they think they were going? Didn't they know that the sea was that way? Didn't they know, like, hey, we're going towards the sea? They didn't start complaining until they got there?
Right. Well, you can cross the sea, but it's going to take a while, and you can't cross the sea.
Oh, okay. So you send a few people over. And got it. Cool. So yeah. It's like an action movie.
Yeah.
Like,
kind
of like, you know, you can't fly over it, but...
Okay, cool. You can't... Well, in Oregon Trail,
you gotta,
there are several
options. You got to forge it.
Was there any Native Americans around that could have helped to cross?
No, I don't think
no,
so.
None at this point.
Cool. So they're getting upset. They're like, go ahead.
But they had the master of the world. They had God on their side. You
yeah.
know? So we got to, here's the, you know, they had God there.
Could have built a bridge like, instantly,
so,
but...
So it's interesting because part of the story that people don't know is Miriam and Caleb. So everyone was whining, and then Miriam, who was Moses' sister.
Yeah, very important.
Everyone's whining, da-da-da, complaining. Moses is frustrated. And Miriam, who's Moses' sister, starts singing Jewish songs. They have this in Prince of Egypt, actually. Historical film. And she starts singing songs, and everyone's singing, and then people start singing with her. And like... I don't remember exactly the details, but something like it's not working, right? Or
well, she was singing songs.
Yeah.
And here they had seen the Jews had seen the 10 plagues.
Yeah.
So they knew that God was with them, and all they needed to do, all Moses really needed to do, or even was say, God help us out here, but he didn't. He was just listening to them complaining.
Right.
But Caleb,
yeah,
took it to himself, and he said he had faith, tremendous faith in God. And he started walking into the sea.
Yeah. Okay. With another guy.
There were two men walking.
I would hate to be that guy.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
They started walking in, and as they started walking in,
that triggered
the miracle.
They kept walking in, and I think it like
they
got to their necks,
deeper,
and it got deeper and
deeper,
and it was like, what are you doing? And then Moses was like, oh, shoot, right, God, stick.
He put the stuff.
God knows it has a flair for the instead of just like splitting it before someone walks in.
It's a test of faith.
Instead of like, oh, he's walking in, I get it, but it's like up to his face.
Yeah,
and
man.
Then like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
Even though God is all knowing and all powerful and knows what they're going to decide anyway.
Yeah.
He waits until it's up to their face.
Because of remember that old saying, free will?
So. Do they have free will though?
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's a totally different. So Jesus did... Jesus.
Jesus warned you that thousands of years ago.
No, this is about Jesus, you guys. Yeah. If we're talking about God, we're talking about Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
did he have a stick? Is that in the story? Had that big walk? Moses had
a
walking stick?
Yeah, he had that stick.
And he slammed the stick down,
We don't know if he slammed or not, or he just sort of placed it nicely, or we don't know exactly.
There was a stick in there.
There was a stick.
And then...
The same stick that went in the Nile, the same stick that helped him do the plagues.
He keeps this stick under lock and key?
Imagine it, it's sort of like Harry Potter, everyone's got one wand. So Moses had his one stick.
You're the one contributed this to magic, by the way.
if we want to talk about just general ancient history, people did have staffs and magicians, and I'm not saying Moses was a magician, but magicians would have staffs that they would use for magic. So it wasn't uncommon thing for someone to have a staff and perform miracles with the staff. And
We're not even done with the story. There's more to the story.
Well, the story, more. There's a lot more to
the
big
story. How does it say how high the water went?
Probably does.
I think it does, but I
it's really tall.
Yeah, it's
to them it's really tall. To us, we'd say it would be like
eight stories, maybe. No, it could be tall. I don't know, but I think it does say it.
Because back in the day, their biggest building was like what, four?
No, four stories. Look at them; those pyramids are pretty high.
Pyramids were later.
Pyramids were later, weren't they?
Yeah, but like the Sphinx and things like that were around then. So they
that's not that tall though.
That's true.
It's like here in Chicago, if you see like the old skyline, the things that they called skyscrapers, and people are like, oh my god, these buildings are so tall. And then you're downtown right now, and nobody even knows what those buildings are.
But I mean, you're right. I don't know how tall. I don't know how tall it was.
Anyway, go on. So the water goes up, and they're like, cool!
Caleb and the
other guy. I want to say
walking, and it keeps splitting. And when they see this happening,
everyone's like,
whoa, this is our chance. So Moses now leads. Moses now leads with Miriam, and they start going in, and they all follow through.
Cool question. Have you ever stepped on the bottom of a lake?
Yeah, it's muddy.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's real gross.
Yeah.
How do they walk across that?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Did Jesus?
Why do you keep saying Jesus? Jesus had been born for like 3,000 years.
Hail him, love him. He's in your hearts.
Yeah, sure.
This happened in Lake Delton, Wisconsin. Like, there was a big storm and it busted out the lake. They found like some old guns in there and like a bunch of sunglasses and stuff. But like, you couldn't really walk out there. It was like, it would go up to your knees.
Yeah.
So we're also just including in this miracle that he like dried out the bottom part. Because I mean, he's got to think ahead.
Remember, the water got so. This is the way.
What about all the things that were living in there that needed to live?
Beside the meat rush.
Things live in the mud, you guys.
No, they got sucked out on the side.
Sucked out on the mud. So I'm a mud crab. I'm chilling.
And then...
All of a sudden, I don't know pharaohs. I don't know what Jews are.
You're just a mud crab.
You've been mellowing out there for 30 years as long as those mud crabs live.
They live for a really long time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get sucked out and you're on the side of this wall.
Yeah.
There's all these fish.
Yeah, but... You're a mud crab. It probably lasted only no more than, I don't know, half hour.
No,
you're like,
long.
It wasn't long?
You know how long you have to cross it?
Oh, that's true. A million people. So it lasts a while, but what does mud crab know? It's just chilling there. It doesn't make a difference.
So Jews hate mud crabs. Go on.
So, anyway,
of a mud crab.
It would seem to me, if there's any logic to the story, that when he got sucked in, it was kind of like a smooth surface.
Cool. It's smooth.
Or call it like
a road. Like an American highway.
Like a road.
Like
a dirt road. A dirt trail. Muddy trail?
See, there's always... Since it was a Red Sea, and there is coral.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's right. That is a major.
Maybe the water got sucked out. And when the water sucked out, the rocks, the coral, whatever...
I guess maybe the rocks, just coral bottom.
And they just walked on the rocks.
Yeah, but coral's sharp.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So maybe there wasn't coral. It was just rocky bottom.
Maybe. Because
it could be, like you said, a lake. But this was a sea.
And it's a sea, I guess.
The sea doesn't really have... It's just sand and rock.
Or maybe it's just a bunch of sand. Okay.
Well, no, the sand, you would...
So anyway, all these Jews had to cross quickly, and there were a lot.
There were a lot.
At least a million.
Yeah.
And then...
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And they had to cross. And then, of course, and tell me if I'm saying anything wrong. And then Pharaoh's coming. And then as the Jews are finishing crossing, Pharaoh's chariots and army come. And then yeah. as they're about in the middle, and most of them are there, three quarters.
God destroys all these guys.
Destroys all God. So God Water. Destroys all the soldiers, the chariot, the horses.
The horses.
Yeah.
See, horses. You're caring about the fish. He killed a bunch of horses. The horses did.
He did.
Nothing.
He killed a bunch of horses.
Also, can we talk about?
Can you imagine
so God
that?
Killed all these soldiers too.
Yeah.
You know these soldiers are like. They don't decide what they have to do. They're told what they have to do, right?
It's
they're
it's
just
crazy.
Living their life.
But,
they were born into what they were born into. They probably had to become soldiers.
But there is, yes, I'm not discounting that by any means. But also, there were opportunities during the 10 plagues for Egyptians to have seen the plague, because the Egyptians would see the plagues also. They happened,
yeah.
It happened to them. They had the opportunity to
switch over.
They had the opportunity
so
to be good to the Jews. They had opportunities and didn't do it. So I mean, I'm not saying that means they should all be dead in the sea. I'm just saying they weren't. Not all of them were the most innocent. Is all I'm
well,
trying to say.
Well, if you're a soldier, you couldn't. You had no choice.
No, yeah,
that's probably
if they
true.
Left, they would have been killed.
Oh yeah,
for
no, you're desertion. Probably right.
Desertion
or whatever it is.
So they really didn't have a choice. They were screwed to begin.
Do you imagine? So we're talking
so
about.
So do they go
probably.
To heaven right away?
They what?
They better get to go to heaven because they didn't do anything
the
wrong.
The soldiers?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
They didn't do anything wrong.
Well, at that moment they didn't, but you don't know what they did prior.
It depends what they did prior.
Oh my God.
I'm
some of those millions of Jews did something wrong. Someone in that group was a bad egg, and they made it to the other side just fine.
Yeah, they did.
Out of a million people, come on, at least 100,000 of those people are bad. Right?
Do you imagine like all the horses and all those chariots, like, and the Red Sea is a big sea, right? Can you imagine
it's
like that happens, and like some Bedouin is like at the wet Red Sea one day, like washing his family, and all of a sudden a horse. And like a bunch of soldiers wash up at the end. He's like,
well, we don't have a quote from one of those guys.
Right?
It's too bad.
Barbara.
Wouldn't that be wild?
The stink on the shore of dead people and horses would be immense.
Immense. Somewhere they would all wash up. The current would take them somewhere.
Dead
no, the Midrash talks about that.
Oh boy, the Midrash.
Wait, is there any more to the story?
Yeah, there is.
They get to the other side and they're like.
So they get to the other side.
Done.
The Jews keep walking to the next camp.
Cool.
The Egyptians get buried. Ugh. One Egyptian does live.
Mm-hmm. One.
One.
To and tell the story.
His name, Jabba the Hutt.
not quite.
Not born yet. Pharaoh is the living, he lives.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Pharaoh walks out of the Red Sea by himself, walks up.
Was he just really close behind, or did he like?
Well, he was probably the leader. He was probably in the front.
So he was able to get out and the rest weren't.
Well, that's where the Midrash comes at. Everybody
cool.
else
again,
killed.
The Midrash is our stories,
that
sort of try and explain things. Are not part
but
of
he,
the Old
he
Testament.
Does come out.
Mm-hmm.
So he really got the ultimate punishment now. You think a week before or 5 days before, his son dies, who he loved very much, who was going to be the you know, take over the throne.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now going through mourning of losing his son.
Mm-hmm. To be fair,
and
though,
now,
he had a pretty good life before this.
Before. But now he has to mourn losing his whole army.
Right. I mean, how do you go back to your kingdom
and say, well,
well you
here
have to go
I
all
am.
Way around
I'm
that
the
sea,
great pharaoh. And first, the Jews are gone. All the firstborns are dead. And now the greatest army in the world is demolished.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Because we didn't teach any of them how to swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Is that what happened? Couldn't some of them swim like really good?
Maybe.
Are they covered in armor?
They're all covered in armor.
Anyway,
yeah,
is that and that's the
probably,
end of the story?
Yeah.
And then the Jews lived happily ever after. And
well, no,
ever
no,
happy
no
again.
Happily after. First off, not only that, but what people don't know, the Book of Joshua is basically nothing but the Jews fighting wars in Israel, or getting to Israel by fighting group after group after group after group. And that goes on for a long time. I don't know how long.
At what point are you like, maybe we just go somewhere else? Like, is this place really that cool?
Well, we tried
like,
for 2,000 years. We were there for 2,000 years. We weren't there.
Jesus.
It's true. We weren't there and they were still killing us. What are you going to do? We were in Europe.
Maybe you guys should just take a hint.
Yeah, apparently, right?
Now I would like to get to the part where I tell you a story in Christianity that I always remembered hearing. And this is like one of the first stories that I heard that made me question Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, what? And I'm going to tell this story to you.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. It's not for the obvious reasons why I think that a lot of people are going to think. But it's something that I think that we should talk about. And if you believe in this, it cool, you're allowed to believe in this. This is just me, these are my opinions, and hopefully I don't offend you. This is John 2-1 to 2-11.
That's my favorite John.
John's actually one of the cool books. It's definitely not one man. I mean, you could argue with me on that one, but it's not one dude. It's a bunch of different guys, a bunch of different stories pushed together, because there's no way. Anyway, this is the story of Jesus changing water into wine. Do you know this story?
No.
You don't know? You know about it, though.
You know it happened, but not the whole story, right? Yeah.
Cool. We'll just start here. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in whatever, in a city. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had been invited to a wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." And Jesus said, "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants,
"Why was he so grumpy at a wedding?"
Dude, I don't know, right?
I guess he didn't drink wine.
Well, he's trying to say
he was sober, that's why.
He's literally saying, like, this is what's happening. They're at a wedding, right? People are getting way too drunk and drinking too much wine.
Gotcha.
Right? And obviously, Jesus' mom must have been dipping in the wine as well, because otherwise, why would she care so much?
That's a good point.
She turns to Jesus and she's like, "Hey, Jesus. Hey, babe. Hey, son. We're all in a wine. I know you're the son of God. Can you make some more wine?"
So what happens next?
And Jesus is a little drunk, and he's like, "Hey, woman, I'm drunk too. I don't want to. Come on. It's not my time to be Jesus."
Or he's just sober and grumpy about it, too.
Everyone else might be the only sober person.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's sober in this.
And he's like, "God, Mom, you're drunk."
Yeah, everyone else is drunk.
Everyone's drunk. We're fine. The wedding's almost done. Can we just finish the wedding? Anyway, his mom says to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing.
Oh, I knew. Cool. Okay.
Each holding from 20 to 30 gallons.
Of water.
Of water.
Well, he turned our ritual water into wine? That's kind of messed up.
Well, it says, Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So apparently they were empty. Okay. So they filled them to the brim. So apparently they went, got water, filled it back up, came back.
To get back in that.
Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet."
Okay.
So they did. And the master of the banquet tasted the water, and it had been turned into wine.
Okay.
He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out their choice wine first. Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." So that is just saying, this is the best wine I've ever tasted. This wine is fantastic.
Yeah.
So not only did Jesus turn water into wine, he turned it into the best wine. What Jesus did here was the first sign through which revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. How do you feel about that story? Even though I made fun of it halfway in between. What do you two Jews have to say about that story?
Well, you know, one thing I learned from a very young age is that, I think all Jews have learned this, and if they haven't, they need to learn it, which is, people have been trying to kill us for a lot of bad reasons, for no reason, for a long time. So sometimes the best thing to do is just stay quiet about other people's religious experiences.
I don't need
the Christians have killed millions of us, millions of the Crusades for no reason. Now I'm going to give them a reason on this podcast?
No, they're not that way anymore. We're not. Come on. What do you feel about the story?
It's a good story.
Is it though?
It's a good story.
I'm going to fight with you on that. I read the New Testament
a long time ago, years ago, because I wanted to read it.
It's a new one. Let's read the sequel.
So I had read the story before, but this was years ago, and for all the sort of grandeur it gets, it's kind of a lame story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he doesn't, like, you want to talk about the spectacle of God in the Old Testament, right? Yeah. The sea splitting, that's the thunder and lightning as the Torah is coming down, the Bible is coming down the mountain. You can go on, the 10 plagues, which are epic. And here, he doesn't even, like, lift a finger. Like, it's just pour the jugs in, take the jugs out, it's wine. Like, that's pretty lame.
Jesus did a beer run at a party.
Yeah, we don't know in this story. So maybe I have a different take on the story, where the story could be an important story.
Okay, here we go.
Please.
Here.
So now, we don't know.
Or do you want me to, can I rip on the story before you tell me what it's important story? Okay, because now I'm going to feel bad once I rip on it.
No. I don't feel bad. Maybe this is an important marriage. Maybe all the heavy duties of the...
They didn't decide to write that part down.
Oh, I don't know. So, but maybe the heavy duties were of the area were there.
And so she was showing them.
Listen, I'm an important guy.
It's true. That's a good point.
So we don't.
But in the story, he never really says that. He never said that it was him.
But it says at the end there that everyone knew that.
No,
was his
not
first...
everyone. Just his followers.
No, just the disciples.
He didn't say to everybody. He didn't say at the wedding, "Hey, everybody, this wine that you're drinking used to be water. You're welcome."
Gotcha. His disciples and his mom and
yeah,
because
that's not how Jesus worked.
Right? No,
back
he was chill.
He was So it says here, everyone bring blah 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 blah. What Jesus did here, which the first signs in which he's revealed his glories, and his disciples believed in.
You know what's interesting is that there's a lot, and I don't know a ton about the New Testament, but there's a lot in a lot of the miracles that happened in the Old Testament. There's a lot of symbolism behind them. And I'm curious what the symbolism is for water into wine. Like, why?
Well, the blood of Christ is.
But that's later. That comes later, though. They added that symbolism to it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what?
This is foreshadowing.
Right. Why was water into wine a big deal for the followers? Or was it not? Was it just a miracle he could do there to prove to his followers that he was cool?
I'm going to say that it is probably one of the lamest miracles.
I agree. It's pretty lame, right?
It is. And this is one that people bring up constantly.
Even like, Moses' first miracle or trick to show the Jews was the staff turning into a snake.
That's way cooler.
And that was the first thing he did. That's way cooler than water.
And Moses isn't the son of God.
Right.
This is Jesus.
Right.
He is supposed to be the son of God. Also, if you're Christian, he is God.
Right.
There's three gods.
He turn all those water jugs into snakes? How cool would that be?
Even then, his dad, check this out, his dad created the universe.
And
his dad created water.
And think of those plagues that his dad did.
Hey, my dad, I know my dad made the earth. But one of the things I could do is I could turn water into wine.
There you go.
Why did he need water to begin with? He is the son of God. Just make wine out of nowhere. Like, you could pull it out of the air and turn it into the jugs. Why is he making people go fill up 30...
That's like 100 gallons.
That's a lot of water to carry. Oh, go do that, and I'm just going to...
It's a lot of water in the middle of the desert. I mean, that's a little bit of a...
But he wanted to see the people work. Maybe the guys that carried the water, they got the steak, said, "Hey, we brought the water. Wow, look at this."
That's true. It says that they noticed that it turned into wine.
They had to notice, because they know they brought the water.
He could have just said, "Hey, see those empty jugs over there? Go look, make sure that they're empty." Okay, they're empty. It's like a magician. Go, make sure that they're empty, make sure there's nothing in them. Check out those jugs. Cool, nothing's in them. All right, now go, but look. There's wine! Whoa! It seems like a lame magic trick to me. And it's like, I don't know. And then you get into like the blind people and the lepers and all this stuff. And it's like, were they really not blind anymore? Or is it kind of
like those
are
legit cool miracles. Those are cool miracles. Yeah.
You were blind and you could see all of a sudden.
That's a cool miracle. Yeah,
but
the water and the wine.
God made them blind to begin with. He could have just not made them blind.
Yeah, but Jesus, you know, did what he did.
But he's like, "Hey, Dad, my dad made you blind, but not me." And then
why are you making us defend Jesus?
You are. I'm asking you not to. You're the ones who are.
We have to. Don't you understand? We don't have another choice. Look at history.
Oh, man. Well, I think, but in history, through history though, you guys still think Jesus is a cool dude.
Yeah.
You just don't think he's the son of God. Anyway. Anything that you have? Like, is there something that you wanted to...
Anything you want to plug?
Oh, my thing was... my thing was, what is something that you think that a Gentile like me should know about Judaism?
being a Jew.
You got one thing to tell them.
What's
one?
Something that's like, oh, like, oh, I don't think a lot of people know about that, and I think it'd be cool if they knew about that.
What I do think is that we are different, and that we're survivors. We've survived such. We've been around for so long. We've been around for so long, and so many different. Usually, unfortunately, other religious have tried to wipe us off the planet, or dictators, etc., over the history of us, and we're hanging in there, and it makes us different. It makes us survive. It makes us strong. But is it easy being a Jew? No, it's got a lot of laws. It's got a lot of difference. But it's you're born into it, and then if you read the history. You say, wow, man, you know, my father did this, my grandfather did it, my great-grandfather did it. And it goes through a long chain, and we're still doing it. We're still doing the same thing today in 2016 that somebody did 3,000 years ago and 3,500 years ago. It's just an amazing thing. And that's what keeps me going. I like it. Everybody knows about Fiddler on the Roof, and one of the greatest songs in that play is tradition. And tradition is... doing that Passover that my grandfather did it, my father did it, I did it. Now David will, when I'm not here, he'll do it.
My sister lead it.
Well, yeah, I think it's good as long as the tradition is like just for something for you and doesn't do anything to anybody else. And right. Like, because some people are used like tradition, like marriage is between a man and a woman. That's their tradition. Well, yeah, it's it's not like.
Well, yeah, I think that's one thing about Judaism is that the traditions tend to be pretty personal. It's a personal religion. There are no, you know, God is not, we don't see our God. The traditions are done mostly as a personal thing. We're not trying to convert other people. In fact, we're...
is that not part of the thing, like converting?
No, in fact, it's quite the opposite. We're not even supposed to, like, try and convert people. Like, quite the opposite. We are...
You're supposed to not convert them?
They have to choose it.
Yeah, they have to choose on their own, and... the conversion process is a pain in the butt.
It's work.
Cool. Anything else?
This is fun. I've never done one of these things before.
Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. It's very interesting to me. And I love hearing about Judaism and like the history behind that, because Christianity is just so boring to me. It is.
I think we need to bring bacon down for a Passover
steak. Oh, yeah, you think so?
Am I allowed?
Yeah, of course.
I am the least Jewish person.
So what?
Also, what was my
Jewish
name?
We drink a lot of wine.
Oh, I could drink wine. Rockmeal?
I gave him Rockmeal as his Hebrew name.
Because my name's Robert.
Rockmeal, I thought. That's a very Jewish name.
Rockmeal.
I don't remember.
Something. Did you give me a middle name?
Rockmeal
Bacon. I don't know.
Do you have a middle name?
Andrew.
Andrew.
Robert and Andrew, I think, are...
Abraham.
Probably Abraham.
Yeah, I'll go with Abraham. I like
that. Rachmiel Avraham Bacon? I don't know.
Which is the least Jewish name.
There's a Hebrew word for bacon, but I don't know what it is.
Oink, oink.
Yeah, oink, oink. There it is.
All right, I'm Robert Bacon.
I'm David Schwartzbaum.
I'm Steven Schwartzbaum.
And thank you for tuning in to Jews to Gentiles.
Don't hurt us.
Is this week's episode of Try This Podcast. If you like this podcast and want more, you can listen to all our episodes on trythispodcast.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, or Pocket Cast. You can contact us by emailing us at trythispodcast@gmail.com, writing on our Facebook page, or you could leave us an iTunes rating and review. That's it. Make sure to tune in next week, and we'll have a whole new guest, and we'll do the podcast that they have always wanted to do. I'm Robert Bacon. Keep trying.
We went and tried this and saw what transpired. This particular podcast filled our desires. We had a lot of fun and it was full of wit. Robert Bacon was our host and he's full of shit. We went and tried this. Now that it's done, it's been done, but never was before we did it. You're drunk.